Welcome to episode 24 of Your Kids Next Read podcast, in which we talk about books and reading for kids of all ages. And thank you for the wonderful ratings on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us in the rankings. I'm Alison Tate, author of middle grade adventure series The Mapmaker Chronicles, The Adaban Cipher, and my latest The Maven and Reeve mystery series. And I'm here with my co-host, the incredible Megan Daly, celebrity teacher librarian, blogger at Children's Books Daily, and author of Raising Readers, How to Nurture a Child's Love of Books. Megan and I, along with our good friend, author Alison Rushby, are founders of the Your Kids Next Read community on Facebook. Search for Your Kids Next Read there to join us. So, what's happening in Meganland this week?
Oh, look, I have been knee-deep in sort of first week of school planning. It doesn't seem to matter, Al, how long I have been teaching. Like, I've been a teacher for well over 20 years, and still the first week of every term just about slays me. I have just been coming home exhausted, and I keep looking at my delightful library technician and saying, I don't know why I'm so tired. I'm so busy. It's just, you know, teaching changes all the time. You would think that you might be able to pull out something that you did last year and reuse it. You just never can. So I am sort of rewriting whole units, and I'm learning all about international baccalaureate and PYP programming. So it's all new to me anyway. So I am just like head down in planning for library lessons and English curriculum and all sorts of things. I'm really enjoying it, but I just feel like I've been stuck at a computer for an entire week, which is okay.
I was thinking about this the other day because I have a friend who's a teacher, and she was teaching grade 5 last year, and this year she's teaching grade 1.
And she's
a relatively new teacher. Like, she's only been doing it for a couple of years. And, you know, I just realized that she's pretty much having to reinvent the wheel every term, in the sense of getting it all together. And then if you're teaching a completely and entirely different grade, you are starting from scratch. Like, it's really hard. She's working so hard.
Yeah, and we do. And this is the thing, like, I think, like, if I looked at when I left St. Aidan's and I looked at my sort of data storage on there, I would have had hundreds of thousands of words worth of planning documents and planning I'd done over the 15 years I was there. I didn't take any of it with me, because the thing about teaching is that every group of students is completely different. Oh. And, well, you know, like, every child is individual, aren't they? And so you can't sort of reuse ideas, but you've got to plan for your particular group of students and how they work together and their strengths and their challenges, as we call them. And, you know, it's really, I just feel like nobody quite understands how much work teachers have to put into getting the best out of their students and really engaging them. And the planning, it's just always in our head. I've just had a really good friend of mine, Mel Kruger, also a teacher librarian, text me this morning and say, I need a 40-minute lesson for such and such and such and such. And you just always, we've both been teaching for over 20 years, and yet we are always thinking about how we do something better. It's exhausting. And
wow,
also a privilege.
Yeah, no, it's, look, I it's like anything. You kind of, you know that things are, you know, that there's a lot of work involved in being a teacher. There must be, you know, you're wrangling 30 different types of, you know, learner and different types of things every single time. But the reality of then having to think about how you're going to teach a certain thing to this certain group of kids, it's a bit like, you know, when you write novels, you kind of know how, like, you've written a novel, so you know how to write a novel. But every single time I approach writing a new book, it's different. And it's an interesting thing, because people always, you know, say to me, oh, well, you know, you've got your 8 novels out now. Like, it must be really easy. And it's like, every time I sit down to write one, I have to remember how to write one.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds mad.
No, that makes so much sense.
And that's just me wrangling that. That's not me and 30 other personalities involved in that. So I can't imagine what it's like rolling up being a teacher every day. It's amazing. So I haven't been doing that. What I have been doing is taking myself off to hide in my car so that I can get my edits done on the manuscript I'm working on at the moment.
Why in your car?
Oh, I was at home the other day, and I just have really been struggling to find the mental capacity, you know, headspace bandwidth, shall we say, to actually get focus on this thing. Because that's the thing with editing. Writing's a funny thing. Writing I can fit in around things. Writing I can do in 10 or 15 minute bursts. I can do it, sitting under a tree. I can do it while I'm at soccer practice. I can do it whatever. Because writing, you're always kind of thinking about it, always. Like you're always in that world. And then when the time comes, you just sit there and you go for it. Editing requires a completely different level of concentration, and editing requires a really different approach because you're working through the problems of the story. So you've got the whole story in your head. Like you're not just working on it piece by bit, piece. You've got the whole story there, and you're thinking about what you need to move around to make, this bit work and that bit work, and how do you strengthen this aspect of the character, and how do you, there's just certain things that I know need to be done, and I'm trying to get my head around how I'm going to do that. And you really need you need sort of what's the word I want? Uninterrupted. See, I can't even think about words anymore. Uninterrupted thinking time to do it. So I was sitting here and I was thinking, right, I'm going to do this now. And I sat down, and then the guy over the back started cutting down trees. I had, book boy downstairs practicing his guitar. I had my younger son, book boy junior, was on Discord or something, shouting at one of his mates in excitement about something. And I thought, oh no. So I got in my car and I drove about 25 minutes to a spot where I was just overlooking the river, and there was just me and the car, and it was brilliant. And I thought, why did I not do this before? Why have I not left home to do this before? Like I've just been struggling through this, stay at home stuff. But we're out soon, so it's all good. Anyway, we have rabbited. We need to move on. We're waffling. Let's talk about our book mail for this week. And I'm going to go first just because I've got a couple of quick, updates to talk about. I've got the second book here in the Prison Healer series by Lynette Nonne. It is called The Gilded Cage. It is YA. It is out now. I read the first one, The Prison Healer, and I very much enjoyed it. She writes an amazing world. Like it's a big, she's got that, that sort of, it's a very American feeling in that sense of it's that big YA story. It's, the characters are very larger than life. The stakes are massive. And she does a really, really great job with it. And I am really looking forward to reading this because, as I said, I enjoyed the first one. Like I read the first one, enjoyed the first one. And, classic YA fantasy. And I think if you have a young reader in your life that loves a bit of, classic YA fantasy, they will adore this. I think they will absolutely love it. Sarah J. Maas has given it a blurb, so you're in really good territory when Sarah J. Maas is calling you a masterful storyteller and saying that this is a must read for any fantasy lover. I reckon, get on
Get on
board
it.
that. Get on board that. And then the other book I have is the new one in the Kingdoms and Empires series by Jacqueline Moriarty. And this one is called The Astonishing Chronicles of Oscar from Elsewhere. It's illustrated again by Kelly Canby. Beautiful. Like the whole thing is just like the
Oh,
production
stunning.
is beautiful, the cover is beautiful. It's a gorgeous thing. This is the fourth book in the Kingdoms and Empires series, so they're standalones, but they're linked. And she writes a gorgeous, magical, whimsical, sort of feeling story, and I think that this one is one that will be again loved by many. Just having a look, I can't quite. Oh, 2nd of November, it's coming out.
I got it in the mail probably the same day that you did, and I texted a photo of it to my library technician. I've promised I will bring it in for her on a Monday because she is an absolute Kingdoms and Empires fan, and my 13-year-old grabbed it out of my hand and raced into her bedroom with it. So I love it when, she's probably a little bit past the age group for which it is intended now, but when you've started a series and it doesn't matter how old you become, when the next one comes out, you're like, I'm escaping back into that world.
Yeah, she's like she does write that. Have you met her? Has she done
I
school
have.
talks?
She has got really fabulous floral dresses.
She does.
we spoke together at Somerset Story Fest a few years ago, and I met her there. And we got some photos together with all the authors. We seem to have a uniform of like floral gourmand kind of dresses. And I can't imagine you in a floral dress, Al.
No, I think I actually saw, I do actually recall seeing that photo now that I think of it. There is the printed author dress. No, I'm not generally a printed author dress girl. I'm generally more of the authorial
Blazer.
blazer, yes. But yes, I can totally see it as a valid,
And I've
authorial
listened
fashion
to a few
choice.
podcasts recently, actually this week, with Jacqueline Moriarty being interviewed around the place. And I really, really, she's a delightful lady. And
Well, she is,
a
and
lovely series.
the reason I ask is because I think that when you meet her, you can totally see how authentic the voice of her novels are.
Absolutely.
She's got that same offbeat sense of humor and that sort of whimsical vibe about her. She's slightly otherworldly in her conversation sometimes. And I think it's a real case of that authentic author voice, coming through and
Absolutely.
telling a story. But what have you got for us?
Yes, we've waffled because we love Jacqueline Moriarty. I'm going to say a little bit the same about Edwina Wyatt. Edwina Wyatt wrote The Secrets of Magnolia Moon, which was an honor book in the CBCA Awards a few years ago. And when I first read The Secrets of Magnolia Moon, I remember saying, please, Edwina Wyatt and illustrator Catherine Quinn, start going again on the second one. And it's just out now. It's called The Magic of Magnolia Moon. And in a little bit similar way, it's got this otherworldly feel. I'll read you the blurb of this one. For Magnolia Moon, magic is a way to solve problems. And when you're starting a new class at school and your best friend doesn't live across the road anymore, problems seem to come easily. Being 10 comes with a lot of pitfalls to navigate with friendship, school, and family. But Magnolia will always find the wonder in any situation. And she does. It's just the most gorgeous series for readers from 7 plus. Again, my now 10-year-old grabbed this one out of the mail and read it in about an hour. It's got beautiful illustrations by Catherine Quinn, and they're magical, they're whimsical. They remind me a little bit of the Violet Mackerel series, for people that loved Violet Mackerel. They've got a really Kate DiCamillo feel, and probably, to be honest, a Jacqueline Moriarty feel, but for a younger audience. They're just very whimsical and gorgeous. So I love that one. And I was really excited. I got in the mail Awesome Emu by Greg Dreis, who is an Indigenous author who I adore. He has written, I'm just turning to the back of this book. You can
I can
hear me
hear you
cracking.
turning
I'm
pages.
cracking the pages on this brand new book. He wrote Silly Birds, Cuckoo Kookaburra, Mad Magpie, and Cunning Crow. And it's a beautiful series of sort of fables and family dreaming stories. They are just gorgeous. And in this one, I'll read you the blurb. It says, way back before once upon a time, there was the dream time. And during this period lived a very confident emu called Dinawa. He was tall, fast, and colourful. Most animals thought he was a show-off, but he was too busy talking about himself to take any notice. Would you like to know what happened to Dinawa, the awesome emu? So they're really fantastic morality tales. And this one's reminding us to be humble about our successes. They're amazing illustrations, also by Greg. And again, I've met him many times over at the Story Fest in Ipswich. And he's just an amazing Indigenous author. I really love everything that he comes out with. And then my third book, I feel equally as excited about. It's called The Book for Happy Hearts, and it's by Maggie Hutchins, and it's illustrated by Jess Ratcliffe. And these two have done some amazing stories together. They've done a whole heap of picture books, and this one is what I am buying for, I reckon, pretty much every child between the ages of 5 and 9 for Christmas. It is a treasury filled with poetry and with little craft activities. And I'm going to read what she says in the back of the book for you, Al Tait, because I
Okay.
think you'll like this. It's about stress-free crafting. For those of you who don't know, Al Tait does not craft,
Do
whereas
not
I
craft.
I just can think of nothing better than sitting my children down with a block of clay and being creative. But anyway, this is what it says. Stress-free crafting. The word craft should not bring you out in hives. Craft can be relatively stress-free as long as you set realistic expectations. And she goes on to talk about how craft, yes, can be messy, but it's also a sensory experience and lots of children learn in a very sensory way. So there's craft activities in it. There's poetry, as I said. There's all sorts of gorgeous things. And I mean, Jess Ratcliffe is, she just, oh, her illustrations are just unbelievably gorgeous. So this is a very, very giftable book. It's hardcover. It's by Affirm Press. It's got bees and moons and stars and hearts on the front cover. I cannot say enough good things about this as a really great Christmas gift for a little person in your life. So they are my three books this week.
Fantastic. All right, so we're going to move on to our bingo question. Now, the bingo questions are the questions that come up regularly in the Your Kids Next Read Facebook group. And if you haven't yet joined us in our Facebook community, then please do. Just search for Your Kids Next Read there on Facebook and find us, and we will let you in the doors. But the question this week is one that does come up regularly in a whole bunch of different guises. And it is all about young adult or YA books that are suitable for tweens. So the sort of, 10 to 13 age group. And it's an interesting one because, of course, you do get a lot of readers who get to that sort of age, and they do want to read up. They want to read more exciting, what they consider to be more grown-up books, particularly your advanced readers. They're looking for meatier stories. They're looking for bigger themes. They're looking for higher stakes, and all of those sorts of different things. And so, it sort of often comes up in this in the guise of, for example, one that we had this week, which was a Your Kids Next Read member whose daughter had brought home One of Us Is Lying by Karen McManus, and she was worried the girl in question was 12. She was worried that of whether it was suitable for that particular reader, and one of the Your Kids Next Read members suggested, because the general idea in there was that, One of Us Is Lying is probably better for your 14 plus age group, because the protagonists in the story are all in their last year at school, and that's often a fairly good indicator of where you need to be with these sorts of stories, is how old are the protagonists? Are they 15 or are they nearly 18? Because once you get into kids who are 17 and 18, you are, you're in adult territory, and then your question becomes, do you want your 10-year-old or your 12-year-old to be in adult territory? And so a recommendation in the group was that The Good Girl's Guide to Murder, by Holly Jackson, is similar, in idea, in the sense of it's that sort of crime idea, and it's quite a sophisticated crime story that needs to be solved, etc. But there's less emphasis on relationships, and because there are some quite big themes in One of Us Is Lying in the relationship area. So, the trouble with the YA territory is that, it sometimes brings a higher level of language use, a higher level of theme. When you get into sex and relationships, a higher level of violence, depending on the storylines. And I guess what it comes down to is knowing your particular reader and knowing what the buttons might be for them within those themes. And then it becomes a matter of what type of book is going to suit them. Now, a few years ago on my blog at alisontate.com, we put together, with the help of the Your Kids Next Read community, and we are talking like there are now 21,000 members in that group. So we do get a very wide sort of canvas of opinions. We put together a list of 40 YA books for tweens. So they are books for tweens that were, in at the cleaner end of town, at the sort of less, sophisticated thematically end of town, more suitable for that younger reader. And then we also have on that list 25 middle grade books that feel like YA, because sometimes what the kid is looking for is just something that feels more grown up, even if it's, not particularly more grown up. And, books that we had on that list at that time included things like My Life as an Alphabet by Barry Johnsberg, The Secrets We Share by Nova Wheatman, The Thing About Jellyfish by Ali Benjamin, The Goldfish Boy by Lisa Thompson, Drama by Raina Telgemeier, which is the graphic novel. It's got that sort of, sassy YA feel about it. The Girl Who Drank the Moon by Kelly Barnhill. Like there's, as I said, there's 25 of them on there. So I'm going to put the link to that in the show notes, but because we did that a few years ago, I thought it was worth, just having a chat now, Megan, about, any newer books that you might suggest to put on that list.
Yeah, and it is interesting. It is such a interesting age range and reading range because my girls are both proficient readers. My 13-year-old, I would be happy with her now reading pretty much any YA because she's a really mature girl and she's, well, to be fair, she's watched things on Netflix that I really think she probably shouldn't have watched. So look, the horse has bolted in a sense, Altaïr. The
I
horse has
know.
bolted on that one.
I know.
Can't even talk about it.
And
But
there
look,
is that, but that's a case for lots of kids as well. I think sometimes it's important to, as a parent, to have a look at the reality of what your
Yeah,
kid is doing in other
absolutely.
media as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. And that's what I was going to say, that I can see that she's really moved into that territory. And so she's reading anything now. But my 10-year-old, and look, she's only 10, but I suspect even as a 12 and 13-year-old, she's quite a young reader. She still hasn't read Harry Potter. She finds it quite scary. She is really happy staying in everything is great territory. So you've got to look at your individual reader. But some of the things that my 13-year-old was enjoying, say, last year when she was still definitely, I would say, a middle grade reader, was she really loved Will Kostakis's Monument duology, which is definitely like edging towards YA. I would say it probably is YA, but Will's got a really good knack of pulling things back just before they get a bit too much, and it's got a bit of romance in it, and all of the things that she was looking for. Again, she loved the Maven and Reeve mysteries by you. Yeah, she loved those again because there was a little hint of romance. There was lots of adult issues. There was adult characters in the series. And I don't know if you did that deliberately, but certainly for her, that made it feel less like she was reading a middle grade novel and more like she was reading a YA novel. Did you do that deliberately?
Yeah, I did. There was a there I was looking to write. My characters were slightly older. I knew that they were more sophisticated characters, and I knew that they were going to need a more complicated or complex world and story. I wanted the wedding in there. And so you kind of know immediately you're moving into upper middle grade, but I didn't want it to be YA. So again, it's that sense of pulling back at the moment of like when there is a murder victim discovered, but we don't get too close to it. There is, there's that aspect of knowing when to actually just take a step back so that you don't take that, take that jump over into, serious YA
Yes,
territory.
that's right. So she really did enjoy Maven and Reeve. She also really enjoyed Lenny's Book of Everything by Karen Foxley, and she's just devoured Karen's latest one, which is Dragon Skin. It's for all readers, I would say, from 10 plus, but it's got quite a bit about toxic masculinity in it and domestic violence, which takes it quite high up the middle grade level, I would say, and she really enjoyed that. She's also loved The Edge of 13 by Nova Wheatman and Are You There, Buddha by Pip Harry. Catch Me If I Fall by Barry Johnsberg was a favourite with her and all of her friends. And the Skyward series by Brandon Sanderson, which we were saying earlier, gets mentioned quite a lot in Your Kids Next Read. She's a bit of a fantasy reader. So she enjoyed that. And just on that, Jazzy, I want to give a shout out here to Jazzy from Jazzy's Bookshelf, who's done lots of reviews on my website, and I will link to those in the show notes. She's done lots on yours, I think, as well. She's spoken for you a lot, Al. And she is a very mature reader and was reading a lot of YA when she was still in
Quite
middle
young.
grade age group. Yeah, so I will link to what she has suggested. And I also wanted to give a shout out to the Raimi Nightingale series. Again, they're not really a series, but they're linked by Kate DiCamillo. They are quite complex older characters. I think it's a more upper middle grade series with really big real life issues, and my daughter has loved them, as have eye. So what have you got for us? It's a bit more current there.
Well, I'm going to recommend Missing and the Book of Chance by Sue Whiting, which again, firmly for me, sits in that upper middle grade territory. Really exciting stories, contemporary tales, but just really well done. Lots of action, you know, the mysteries, all sorts of things going on. I really liked Elsewhere Girls by Emily Gale and Nova Wheatman. I think the time slip aspect of that makes it, you know, more sophisticated in some ways. It doesn't, you know, I just really enjoyed that as a story, full stop. The Madoran Chronicles by Lynette Nonne, who we talked about earlier, but it was the first series, I think, that she did, and it is a firm favourite with this age group. It is recommended. This is one that comes up in your kids' next read over and over again as a recommendation for this sort of age group, but also as a YA. So it sits really beautifully in that sweet spot of, you know, just taking kids from even... I'm pretty sure Jazzy was reading those when she was about 10.
Yes, sure, she was.
Because they were huge favourites with her. And the Elemental series by Amy Kaufman is another one, which is just, you know, it's middle grade, firmly middle grade, but it has all the elements of, you know, the wonderful fantasy stuff that Amy does for YA. So I think, you know, all of those, you can find the things you're looking for, you know, that they can find the feeling of those books that they want without necessarily having to take them into territory that they may not be ready for just yet. We will put all of these in our show notes at yourkidsnextread.com, including the link to the 40 or 65 other books that were recommended earlier. And I think
that should keep people busy.
That should keep them busy for a while. And I think, you know, this is why we have the community, right? This is why we started it. This is why we've been doing it for all these years, is because you can't read every single book yourself before they read it. If you want to basically try to keep track of where they are with their reading, particularly when they're in that 10, 11-year-old age group, I think it's still important to do that. This is where you know, go for help, because there's always going to be someone there to go, oh, you know what, that's not going to work for you, but you should definitely try this one. And that's what we love about it, right?
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on to our quick tips this week, and they will be quick because we have waffled. What have you got for us, Megan?
Oh, look, weather's warming up in Australia. I don't know if you're listening in Australia, but in Australia it's definitely getting warm. So I'm starting to get outside in my garden, which I absolutely love. And it made me remember, I've obviously got the small bee and the smallest bee in my life now, and I am living my best life because, as you know, I love craft. And I also love gardening, and craft and gardening have this really great intersection for me. And I also love involving books in that process. So when my girls were young, we did things like we built worm towers and did pots full of carrots after we read Parsley Rabbit's book about books. I've always had lots of books about fairies because I'm 45 and I still love fairies. and my now 10-year-old adored dinosaurs, not so much a fairy girl. And so we had dinosaur gardens and fairy gardens, and we did all sorts of projects which all started from books. So I'm going to list in the show notes. So my tips are going to be more links. I'm going to link to some of the fairy gardens I created, the dinosaur gardens I created, and some of the things that I really love. But I think that books about gardening are a really good starting point. And if you've got a reader who isn't so much a lover of stories and they're not loving their school readers, getting out a non-fiction book about gardening is a great way to get them doing a little bit of reading and doing a little bit of creating at the same time. So I think books are a great starting point for any experience, and there's so many great gardening books out there. So as the weather warms up, I just wanted to encourage everybody to purchase or borrow some books on all of these things about gardening and get out and create. So I'll put a whole heap of links in the show notes to my favourite books on gardening.
Excellent. All right, my tips this week are actually about teaching kids to read like writers, which I know kind of sounds a bit weird, but I had a conversation on my Facebook page this week at Alison Tate Writer, and it was about the kind of what I've noticed through the course that I teach at the Australian Writers' Centre, but also just through a whole range of other things and conversations with people, is we're kind of noticing that there's a proliferation in kids writing these days of So I know that there's some rules out there that say that said is dead and say that, you need to use the biggest, sparkliest possible word that you possibly can in every possible occasion. But what it's actually leading to, we're noticing through when I'm sort of working through the stories that I'm marking and all of that sort of stuff, is a lot of overwriting. And I think that there's a balance between learning the tools that you need, which is learning that there are 100 different words for said, and then not necessarily using them all in one story, because good writing is often pared back or restrained writing. It is not using every three syllable word that you have ever learned in one sentence. And it was a conversation that we had, and it's coming from a lot of different things. It's coming because of the way NAPLAN is marked. It's coming, due to the more academic style of writing that senior school students are needing to use to hit marking rubrics and scaffolds and things like that for their work. But I think it's also important that kids learn the difference between perhaps what you write to get a good mark in an essay and what is actually good, published writing. So one of the things that I think is a good idea is to get kids to read like writers, and it really helps to improve their own writing if they cast a critical eye over what they love to read. So my first tip to get them sort of thinking about it is to start with a favorite book. So one that they know really, really well, so that they won't get distracted by what's happening in the story. So maybe a book that they've reread several times. Then it's just a matter of focusing on the first chapter of that book, reading it through a couple of times. So the first time I would, just take note of the first page and how the writer uses it to draw you into the story. Like, what does that first paragraph look like? What, are we starting right in the middle of the action? How do things unfold in those first few paragraphs? Because, of course, the most important thing about a first page is making sure that the reader wants to read on. The second time you read it through that chapter, look for the information. Where does the writer give you the information about the character, the setting, and the problems in those first few pages? Like, what information are you being given? And it's something I talk to a lot about kids when I teach writing is, not giving me a laundry list of what the character looks like. Oh, she had blue eyes and dark hair and, she was sporty and she was this and she was that. But actually, like, working that information through in possibly the first, depending on the length of the story, the first, three or four paragraphs of that story. So we get an idea of what's going on, but we don't necessarily need a laundry list right up front of every single detail down to the freckle on her nose. Then, look at how the information is given as well. Is it in dialogue? Lots of information is given in dialogue. It is one of the best writing tools is to have your writers have a discussion about something that you want the reader to know. Is it through action? If they look in a mirror and what do they, and they hate their frizzy red hair, ooh, who could that be? Like, that gives me an idea of A, something about the character, but also what they look like. What are they doing? Because if they're, measuring something specifically because they're baking a cake, that tells me something about the character. If they're slopping it into a bowl, without any sort of heed for what that cake's going to turn out like, that tells me something about the character as well. And then the third time that they go through, look specifically at the vocabulary. How often does the writer use a word other than said with the dialogue? Why do they do it? Do you really know, when you go looking for it, do you really notice it? And how often do they use those big unusual words? Like, how are they using them for emphasis? What are they doing with them? Are they using more than one or two? If they are, what's the impact of that? So it's just sort of like, and this is obviously like, mostly going to be for kids who are really, really interested in writing at a young age at this stage. But it's useful for every young writer because it just gives them an idea how to take that information that they're getting, from all of those different ways to use said, and then how to actually use them in their writing in a really useful and good way. Those are my thoughts.
They're great tips. And I just want to add there that if for really young writers, I've just been doing with my year ones exactly what you just said in tip two, but instead of focusing on the first chapter, we've been looking at focusing on the first page of a picture book. And I photocopied the first page of a whole heap of my favorite picture books. We read through the information and we took note of how the author drew us into the story, and we worked out the setting and the characters from that first page so that they get the idea idea that we start the story, you know, with a good opening line. And yeah, that's really interesting listening to you. That's what I've done this week.
Fantastic.
But at a much younger level.
Go you. Look at you go. And you know what? And I made it quite clear when I had the discussion on Facebook that I'm not disrespecting teachers or anything on any level at all. I just wanted to kind of like raise the discussion about what was, you know, what I was seeing and where it might have been coming from. That, you know, it's basically about that. And it was a really interesting conversation. It was really worth, I'm glad I did it. It was really worth doing. All right, let's move on. What are we doing this week, Megan?
Well, the beekeeper and I went to the fruit markets yesterday, and he just walked around like he was living his best life because he hadn't been to the fruit markets in quite some time, apparently. And we purchased far too much fruit because we were overexcited. We do have four children. We have a lot of fruit to the point that I had to add the watermelons to my coffee table and make them look like they were meant to be a part of the, I don't know, landscape of my coffee table. So I'm dehydrating fruit, would you believe?
Because no, I would not believe. Seriously.
We bought about, like, I reckon we bought like 10 kilos of apples and about 8 punnets of strawberries. So I'm dehydrating strawberries, but the kids keep stealing them. So there's going to be none left.
No.
So anyway, that's what I'm doing, dehydrating like a mad woman.
Mind blown. I am not going to be dehydrating anything because I'm getting out. I know, it's exciting. My dear friend, photographer Tamara Dean, her exhibition is opening a brand new gallery up in the Southern Highlands, and I am going to see it, and I am so excited.
That is so exciting.
It is exciting. And BookBoy's got heaps of gigs coming up, and so we're all feeling like we're finally, maybe things are going to move on for us.
That makes me happy.
I know, me too. All right. Well, we will see you next week.
We will indeed.
Where will we find you online until we meet again, Megan?
I will be at Children's Books Daily or in Your Kids Next Read.
All right. You can find all the show notes at yourkidsnextread.com. Come join us on Facebook because we would absolutely love to see you there. Oh, and go buy a T-shirt because we have got T-shirts now. And you will find all the information that you need to know about those at alisontate.com/YKNR. We'll see you next time.
See you next time.